As predicted, there are many people who have not yet come, and so I'll make a very short introduction and another introduction, like a welcome, tomorrow when hopefully more people have arrived. So welcome everybody, you're officially welcomed to Gita Nagari. Who's here for the first time? Oh. Very nice. Well, you're in for a big treat. Big treat. I call it the magic of Gita Nagari. It's a magical place. And one of the magical things that happens in Gita Nagari, for groups, often for most of the individuals, something significant, something very dramatic, transforming takes place. So it's by the mercy of Radha Damodar, so don't be surprised when something like that happens. And it'll be very nice experience. So I'll save the other thoughts that I had about welcoming everybody for tomorrow morning. And I'd like to set the mood the direction for our Japa retreat. And also by design, thinking that not everybody would be here yet, those of you that were here before, there'll be some repetition intentionally so that persons that aren't here aren't going to miss something. A retreat has, even in material life, There's a purpose for a retreat. I was visiting once in Seattle, and there's a lot of devotees in Seattle that work for Microsoft. So twice a year, Bhakt Bill Gates, he goes on a retreat. He goes to an island somewhere, out from the, whatever that place, Puget Sound or whatever it is up there. And it's just himself and one guy in a very secluded place. And it's like there's nothing going on. And Bhakt Bill is envisioning what the company will do for the next 6 months. He goes, whatever he does, he goes, into a space where he's detached from stuff and there's no communication. It's just, Bhakt Bill and Super Soul having a dialogue about where to move Microsoft to the next series of things. Or another devotee that I spoke to just yesterday, he said he was going to be off the grid for 4 or 5 days, and I asked him where he was going, and he described where he was going, and he explained that he finds it's necessary. This is a householder that has a lot of worldly responsibility, business and this and that, so many things. So by design, periodically he goes somewhere where it's just very quiet and enters into another space. And so I'm saying, even for worldly people, This is, and what's intended to happen in that getting away? Of course, it can be just, you know, go with the family and go to the beach and go, you know, la-di-da-di-da and that kind of thing. But if it's more purposeful than just kind of like relax, it's go inward and try to bring oneself into a position that one is more in touch with God and one's relationship with God and communing with God and feeling a spiritual pilgrimage has that purpose. Going more deeply into our spiritual practices is our japa retreat. Another thing with a retreat, and something that I would recommend that everybody contemplate, is our lives are so much made up of doing things, you know, accomplishing tasks and projects and goals, and a retreat has a different purpose. It's not doing something, it's receiving something. On the one hand, we're seeking this communion with God, but we're also wanting to receive. You can recall from our retreat in Gita Nagari in Memorial Weekend on loving relationships. Same introductory theme. To establish a relationship, a loving relationship, one has to be capable and willing and actively involved in receiving as well as giving. So seeking but receiving to get the most from this experience, being a receptive mode as opposed to our conventional doership mode. One devotee was sharing with me recently that their tendency to like just take care of things, and they get up in the morning and they're that the japa takes the back seat and getting things done takes the front seat, and by the end of the day they haven't chanted their japa. And then, you know, the next day that's not going to happen, but the next day it happens, and because the mode of passion of doing and the doership mentality is so strong that it can displace, what to speak of taste for chanting, and can displace chanting. So a retreat is advised to be in a receiving mode. Krishna has extended an invitation to us. I mean, Krishna extends forever an invitation to us. It's an unending invitation. Please come and join me in the spiritual world. But in particular, so many persons were received an invitation. Of course, schedule-wise and other reasons, some persons could not come. But those of us that are here, we said yes to that invitation. And the Krishna's receiving, we're receiving Krishna's invitation as an opportunity to come closer, wishing that our relationship with, particularly our relationship with Krishna in the form of the holy name, become more warm, more personal, more intense, more vibrant. So a retreat is being more in that receiving mode than a doing mode, chain to channel while here. And We've all had the experience of, the header here is commitment. We've all had the experience of people that we've met along the way in our devotional service or our lives, and circumstantially we came together, we did things together, and then circumstantially that changed and we haven't seen that person in some time. And just by seeing that person, or perhaps you think of that person and think, gee, there's a person who was very important to me. Think Krishna while I'm speaking. There's a person who is very important to me, but I've just gotten so busy with my life doing so many things, I've kind of like checked out with that person. So I think it would be a nice thing if I could go and spend some time with that person to make that relationship come to life again, and so that it's vibrant and warm and, you know, full of joy, as I know it has been in the past. There's one, just a practical example of that. Because Govinda's visiting here in America, some persons here and there found out, oh, Govinda's visiting in America. There's one devotee that they were in the Brahmachari ashram together years ago in the Brooklyn Temple. And that person wrote to me saying, I've been thinking of Govinda. You know, is he around? Some way I can get. Said, not only he's around, he's moving around in America. I'll tell you whom afterwards. And so I gave him his email address and they struck up a correspondence, and Govinda's saying, hey, come on over to Vrindavan. Come and spend some time here, where chant with the devotees and with in the holy dham. And he was thinking, he wrote to me saying, I'd really like to do that, but my life is too complicated right now. I can't, maybe later. But it was really nice, you know, having that dialogue with Govinda. So we have that experience, and to renew a relationship that has in the past been very important to us, take some commitment. I'm going to set aside some time and quality time and be with that person. And, you know, you don't know exactly where that's going to go. It's probably not going to be like it was when you associated together before, but you know the person and you know it's going to be a wonderful place wherever that goes. So same, rather than having an expectation of renewing and strengthening our commitment once again to Krishna, particularly in the form of His holy name, be happy whatever direction Krishna takes that commitment that you make to Him. Because we trust in Krishna. Krishna is very kind. Krishna is all loving. So for sure it'll be a wonderful place. So pilgrimage or a retreat has that dimension to it. So seeking and receiving, they may seem to be opposite, but they're not. And commitment unto Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. That's what a retreat is. Conventionally also, a retreat has this connotation, a pilgrimage has a connotation, as well as a retreat, of leaving someplace and going someplace. Like if you're going on pilgrimage to the holy places of India, you leave and you go. And you leave in order, even when you go, if you carry all of your stuff, you know, your thoughts and your worries and your troubles and your, you know, everything, there's no break. You have to, so leave some stuff behind. There's a very nice verse that Prabhupada quoted part of regularly tamasi ma jyotir gama. Ma in this case means not. Don't remain in darkness. Go to the light. Jyotir gama. Prabhupada said it's from that phrase that he took the name back to Godhead. Jyotir gama. Back to Godhead. But to go back to Godhead, it's tamasi ma. Leave darkness. And that verse has four parts to it. It's not just tamasi ma jyotir gama. It's asato ma asad. Asato ma sad gama. Leave that which is temporary and go to that which is eternal. Leave that which is darkness and go to that which is light. Mrityor ma amritan gamaya. Leave the place of death and go to the place of deathlessness. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So, a pilgrimage is like that, going from where we are at present to a new stage of our Krishna consciousness, a new dimension or new experience, according to whatever Krishna arranges for us. Consider like this. At one time, all of us were not as we are at present, practicing Krishna consciousness. And the flow of our life was moving along, and some knock on the door came. It was Krishna's representatives saying, come on over to Krishna's place to practice devotional service. And that opportunity we said yes to. And we made some steps in the direction of that invitation. And some things started changing in our lives. I heard this very nice, like short testimonial from someone about, it was at a Bhakti Vriksha gathering, and they were doing that thing in the beginning of sharing realizations. And he was a South Indian man, not yet married, you know, in his, out of college and in his career. And he was saying, when I was growing up and, you know, in my college days, my early professional days, I've had lots of contact with spiritual groups and reading Bhagavad Gita and studying together Bhagavad Gita and all that. And what I've experienced in relation to this Bhagavad Gita as it is I'm understanding it for the first time. And then he kept going. He said, not just understanding it, but I feel my life is changing. I feel the quality of my life is changing internally and externally. He gave some examples. He said, sometimes I get angry. You know, not like out of control angry, but angry. And I just hold on to something and feel and sometimes speak something. But I've noticed that that's just, it's just going away. The same thing that would trigger me is, it's like so distant and so faint. And I feel happy. I feel like light most of the time. I see the quality of my life is changing. It was very nice. So we've all had those experiences. And we've also had, especially, you know, can stay on for some time, and then you start learning the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And as you learn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you realize, I'm really far from that. I'm way over here. And so what one's knowledge and what one's level of spiritual attainment, there's this big gap. Or even what I know I should be doing and what I'm doing, or what my hopes for attainment spiritually are and what my present experience is. And that can be discouraging, it can lead to complacency, it can, so many things can happen, but there's often a gap where we want to be and where we are. Yes? Does that sound familiar? So, a retreat like what we're doing is an opportunity to close that gap. To go, this is, you know, tamasi ma jyotirgama, to go from the place of complacency or stagnancy or not having taste or what we know we should but we aren't, and enter into that space. You know, it takes letting go, just like to go on pilgrimage, you have to, you know, get out of your space, pack your suitcase and get out of there and go to the, you know, where you don't know what's going to happen next. Maybe you have an idea of what's going to happen, but quite often it doesn't happen that way. Especially when you're on a pilgrimage. Especially if you go to India, anything can happen. I mean, not even spiritually, even materially. Just, you know, go to point A to point B and it's quite an adventure. Satchinandan Swami uses the phrase liminal space. You familiar with that word, liminal? Limin is another word for threshold, like, you know, when you're coming up the stairs to come into the temple room, and then, you know, there's a board right across where the doorway is, and that board is called the threshold. Or you're at the threshold of someone's, you know, you knock on their door. So it's where, in between outside and inside. It's called the threshold. Something like where Hiranyakashipu killed Lord Sringadev. On the limit. And enter into that apparently neither here nor there. You know, like where we are, where we want to be, and enter into that space that it's in between, that liminal space. It's an invitation that we've accepted. Krishna has invited us, come on over to my side. And we're saying, yeah, or we're saying, yeah, but. So enter into that space where to close the gap. And don't hesitate. Don't hold back or hold on or be fearful or, oh my God. You know, it's what a retreat is meant for. Go forward. Upon Krishna's invitation, it's safe. And let that gap between our practical experience internally and what we know devotional service to be, to come closer. So those are some thoughts on what a retreat is meant to help us accomplish. There's some recommendations for having a successful experience at a retreat, or elements for an effective retreat. One of them is, we've touched on it already, but the routine, not speaking of devotional regulation, but routine, like, you know, the routine that we follow every day and follow every day and follow every day of our everyday life, take a break. It's one of the reasons for coming to a nice serene place like Giranagari. Of course, the Giranagari devotees, this is their place, their place of their service. For those of us that are visitors, this is, we're, you know, we left that place behind. We've come here and we've got a little room. Don't get attached to your little room because it's not going to be yours after 4 days. It's going to be empty again. So we don't, we're not setting up shop to make ourselves happy and comfortable. We're here to make this break from the routine and enter into a deeper relationship with Krishna. Something that's related, but it's not identical. Something that's more on the individual level than, you know, the external, is solitude. Part of what we're going to be observing on our 64-round day on Sunday is Mona. And Mona means silence. So I had this experience about, I guess it was a little over a month ago, in Sharanagati, with a group of devotees in Sharanagati at a much shorter japa retreat, abbreviated japa retreat. But many of the devotees experienced and expressed their experience that observing Mona on the 64-round day was very powerful. We'll speak some more about it later, but you know, it's part of it is just turn the volume down, 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 and off. You know, with the blah 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 stuff, the external blah 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 stuff, and go more inward. This is the solitude point. Doesn't mean, you know, be antisocial or don't talk to anybody, but be introspective. It helps to be in a different and a very serene atmosphere, and it also helps to go inward to a contemplative atmosphere. It's something like a child in a womb or a gestation space or something where what you wish in a deeper level for your spiritual well-being can grow in a nice, safe, nurturing kind of environment. That's part of the idea of having an effective retreat. I'm going to go ahead of myself for a moment here and say one of the rules or norms of the retreat, we'd like to make the temple room space a space where there isn't casual conversation. Make it a sacred space. It should be like that anyway. When we're before the deity, we don't have conversation. You know, that training that many of us received, it's kind of dwindled and dwindled and really dwindled. But really, that's the training. That's just like if you're before the king, you don't just have a blah blah conversation about something. So what to speak of Krishna, the King of Kings? So conversation can be out there. I like the idea that it fits in with what Dhruva has decided, that whatever the exhibits and things are out there. Because in here, we'll try to make this our sacred space. We'll go back to the other point, try to make your inside also a sacred space. At least for particularly for the duration of this retreat. So that the spiritual aspiration can become clearer and stronger and sharper and manifest. Try for that. To have an effect, another point is, can use the word transformation, but even to be more graphic, we'll say death. To go from one place to another place of consciousness, there has to be a death of something and a birth of something else. I brought one of my visual little items here. Do you recognize this? What is it? It's a butterfly. And before the butterfly was a butterfly, what was he? A little caterpillar. Now how does a caterpillar, a little worm with legs on it, become one of these? How does that happen? Well, scientists may have their explanation, but there's some contemplation. Something that the Bhagavatam speaks of. A particular verse describes, I don't know of this example, I mean through practical experience, but not an earthworm, but some other kind of a worm, I forget which of an adjective is used. A worm where a bee is coming after the worm. Like he's a woodworm or something like that. He's in the hole in the wood. And here comes a wasp. Bzzz, and the worm knows he's the target of that. And so, according to the Bhagavatam, because of that contemplation, in his next life, what does he become? Becomes one of those guys, a wasp or a bee. Because that's like one lifetime to the next lifetime, because the mind is fixed upon that thing. And that's out of fear. But still, when the mind is fixed on something, that brings about transformation. So, in a retreat, the willingness to let go of your comfort zone, of, you know, I am like this, and I chant like this, and I behave like this, and so on. Let go, and accept the invitation that Krishna has given, and be, in fact, willing to look for little indicators that Krishna may give you to go further towards Him. Not this year, but last year, I had one of these silk butterflies, and in Sharanagati, and there was a young girl from Vancouver. Maybe some of you know her. Maybe some of you don't. Nitai Priya. She did in her sharing experience afterwards. She said, at a certain point after sitting down during the 64 round day, she was feeling a little restless, and so she got up and she started pacing. And as she was pacing, she then decided there's a nice lake in Sharanagati in the middle of a valley. It's very scenic. So she thought she would take a japa walk around the lake along the path. And as she did, she saw a butterfly. And the butterfly was... So she was walking after the butterfly. And whenever her attention went away from the holy name and into the landscape or into, like, you know, stuff, the butterfly went way ahead on the path, like, you know, very far away. And then she it was for her a reminder that I should be paying attention to the holy name. And then the proximity of the butterfly came back again. And this happened, she said, all the way around the entire lake. It's like, I don't know, an hour's walk. All the way around. And then when she reached the spot where we were sitting, the butterfly went away. Now, that can mean nothing. But if Krishna is sending you, just to use that as an example, if Krishna is sending you some example, some indicator your attention unto me, your relationship with me can be strengthened if you chant with the devotees, or if you chant before Tulsi. So last year when we were here, the number of devotees expressed being in a circle around Tulsi, they felt like a lot of strength from the devotees, and specifically they felt something from Tulsi. It's in our prayers, but how much realization do we have if we're not open for that experience? Several devotees expressed. They felt a lot of strength just chanting together with the devotees in front of Tulsi. And if Krishna is giving you some indication of how to come closer to Him, not just get carried away on the mental platform, but be tuned into the indicators that Krishna is giving you to break through to a deeper resonance with Him. Because that's what we're here for. We're here to go more deeply into the chanting of Krishna's holy name together. Don't be afraid of a symbolic death of something that's like our little safety space. Accept Krishna's invitation to come and join Him. Another is to value the assembly of sincere personalities that Krishna has brought together. Invariably, something comes from devotees' experiences, their sharing of their experiences, of something some devotee said, or something that some devotee did, or something that, you know, one little thing that really helped them a lot in the course of going further in their chanting while here, and also taking the enhanced experience of chanting with them. So those are some points to help you have an effective japa retreat. And I'll end with just describing some of the standard norms. Some of the standard norms are standard for any kind of gathering of Vaishnavas. One is a lot of time, energy, and concentrated effort has been put into planning what you're going to experience in the course of being here. So please participate, and participate with sincerity in things that are set up, even if you've done them before, because some of the things will be repeated. Enter into, take them up in a sincere way. It will help your experience. It will help the overall experience of japa retreat for us all. There'll be times when we're doing sharing, and when we're doing that, don't be shy to share. And when you hear another person share, be respectful of what that contribution they're offering to the group. And you may find that some of those when you're going through it, obscure, it may be one of those things that sticks with you and helps you the most. I mentioned, say it again, as a norm, we'll try to establish that the temple room is a sacred space. If there are conversations that must take place, go ahead. Otherwise, as far as possible, conversations can be outside. So when we come into the temple room, it's the experience, the vibration of the chanting of the holy name. I'm sure you'll experience this by the time we get to the 64 round day with all the kirtan and discussions about chanting japa and chanting japa together. This room is going to, just walking into the room, you'll feel It should be like that. Children. Often at japa retreats, I made the exception, but often at japa retreats, it's like, you know, children are banned. So parents with children can't participate. We haven't made that rule. There will be programs for the older children, but you know, the little children are generally the ones that cry more and make other kinds of disturbances. So if you have, you brought children, see others that have brought children, be respectful of the seriousness, the gravity that others are particularly, I mean, it's not like a Sunday program. This is a japa retreat, so it should little extra care and attention to the children thing. And this connects with this simplicity. Maybe it's saying the same thing in other words, but when an individual is trying to become, we're recognizing we're here to become more focused upon chanting. So be respectful. Try to do that yourself. Go inward with the holy name and be respectful of others, of their space in doing that also. Try to create a retreat atmosphere in simple language by those norms. Okay, so any comments or questions? Because if depending on where we are, we'll have some couple more exercises. Anything? Yes.
While chanting or while doing the ritual, it is very easy to receive, but you have given certain pointers of solitude and other practices of how one can receive even during the day. So my particular question is, can you share some guidance on how to receive for the whole day, not just while chanting or
I'll say a couple of things. Because this is a japa retreat, the main focus should go to receiving the pure holy name. And our life in devotion, its foundation or its essence is from our chanting. You know, everything springs from the chanting of the holy name. If we do that nicely, it will be part of our life, part of our, you know, throughout the day experience also. I didn't say it very well, but I think you know what I'm trying to say. Second thing I already mentioned, and that is be receptive, because if our mission in coming here is, or since our mission in coming here is, to go more deeply into the chanting of the holy name and to be present with Krishna in the form of his holy name. So to be receptive of indicators of something that someone may say, or something that you might read, or some inspiration that Krishna is extending to you. But again, in relation to the holy name, and that will affect how you see the things that come your way. Like, let's say, some opportunity for some service. Depending upon, you know, variables that you might have to factor in. If some opportunity for service comes, that's what chanting of the holy name indicates. We want to engage in Krishna's service. So take up that service in that same mood. Krishna is reciprocating or responding with my call for some service. And take it up in that mood. So it will enrich the experience of chanting. One feeds the other, in other words. One nourishes the other. Being another thought on that point is, I'm just recalling the experience of devotees on our 64 round day that said they chanted some number of their rounds in the temple room, some number of them going for a walk, and then some remaining ones in the temple room. Several persons shared like that. And it was nice. It's motive goodness. It's, here we are in, rural Pennsylvania. The trees, the peacocks, the birds, the breeze, and nature. It's very nice. Motive goodness. And, this is on the note of being receptive, this is such a idyllic atmosphere for spiritual practice. And then turn around and come back and be in the temple, and it's transcendental. And what a wonderful arrangement Krishna is making for our spiritual progress. Look to each circumstance to see how Krishna is helping us to make advancement. And staying in that receptive mood, circumstance by circumstance. I'm responding to your question particularly in terms of our experience here at the retreat, deliberately. Anything else? Yes?
Guru, we had gone to Philadelphia at Aryashwar Prabhu's place. He has a Govinda's restaurant.
Yes.
And I saw on his altar that he had a picture of Krishna hugging Gopaguna. I think it's from Pilar Prabhupada. And in the course of our discussion, he was saying that so basically he's so eager to receive us that so when Gopaguna goes back, he hugs him so tightly that they both fall in ecstasy. So, like when I came back, I was trying to chant in the mood of receiving the embrace of the Holy Name. So I'd like to do that.
Okay. You're going right into our next topic, which is a little exercise of writing. I'll introduce it and then Prema Trangadi can take it from there. Sankalpa. This term sankalpa, is anyone not familiar with what sankalpa? Sankalpa? Sankalpa means intention. A common use of sankalpa is in karmakanda rituals. Somebody wants good health, so they do a ritual so they can get good health. Or they want wealth, money, as their intention. And so they perform a yoga, and the expression of that yoga is to get wealth. So sankalpa means intention. There's many other applications of that term, but for our japa retreat, it's What is the particular focus of inspiration or intention of coming here, in our regular language? What brought you here? Or what is your expectation? At the end of this retreat, what is it that you would hope to have accomplished? Say, put in that place in time or this place in time. Sankalpa is It's like a magnifying glass, because a magnifying glass has this effect. If you're anyone who was a little kid that had a magnifying glass, you learned right away how to take the light of the sun and holding the magnifying glass at a certain angle, and you can take the radiant light of the sun and focus it on a straw or a piece of paper or something. And if you hold it at the right angle and the right distance and so on, all that light goes into a real narrow focus, and that paper or straw starts to smoke, and then a little flame, and the next thing you have a flame. And all it is the light of the sun. The same sun that doesn't cause flames passing through the lens of the magnifying glass makes intense heat. So sankalpa is like that. It's taking the mercy of Krishna, channeling that mercy of Krishna through a particular intention that we may have in being at this retreat, where you chant with that intention and remain mindful. Like you might have to hold your hand steady at a certain angle and distance so you can make fire from the light of the sun. That's what sankalpa is. So we are going to begin this retreat, and we're going to end the retreat also with this notion of sankalpa. What is our intention? So you want to spend some time with this? Do you need a microphone? Do we have another microphone? Okay, great. The wireless. Great.
Write down what is the transformation.
going to try to make her jump up on the scale of 1 to 10. 1 being it's just drag. It's just counting around pretty much, you know, just getting around the span. 10 being
helping in your job consistently.
Okay. What would you do with that?